Good evening, everyone, and sorry for the delay. I was on vacation until yesterday, so this is just getting uploaded now. But anyway, over the last few episodes, we've found medications that can treat the most debilitating mental illnesses. And by the 1960s, medications that were highly effective were available to many patients. Millions of people who had been institutionalized were now able to go home and have a chance at happiness. As you can imagine, the rise of these drugs was hugely important and changed not just the lives of patients, but also of psychiatrists, especially in the United States. You may recall that from our episodes talking about the DSM, or that manual for diagnosing mental illnesses, that psychoanalysts reigned supreme through the middle of the 20th century. Part of what contributed to the decline of psychoanalysis was what we talked about already, like the credibility crises, but the rise of psychiatric drugs was likely also a contributing factor. After all, if you can improve a patient's symptoms with a pill, clearly the unconscious mind just doesn't matter that much. As time went on, more and more psychiatrists were convinced that biology was vitally important in mental illness, and to be fair, they were right. This led to a new generation of psychiatrists who were focused almost exclusively on applying drugs to psychiatry and abandoned many norms of psychoanalysts. They talked more casually with their patients, often for shorter sessions, and occasionally might even touch their patients to examine them or shake their hand, which I know sounds mundane, but was a big no-no for traditional psychoanalysts. The most famous of these psychiatrists was probably Nathan Klein, whose life illustrates the successes and failures of some of these groups of psychiatrists. Klein originally graduated from New York University's School of Medicine back in 1943, when psychoanalytic theory was still king in psychiatry, at least in the United States. But Klein was dissatisfied with psychoanalysis and early on began searching for pharmaceutical treatments. You may recall that at the time, the only things really available were sedatives and tranquilizers, which could help calm down or put patients to sleep, but did not really treat mental illness. Klein found these treatments to be lacking and began looking at more exotic sources of medicine, such as the snake root plant, traditionally used in India. However, in the 1950s, chlorpromazine was discovered, as we know, opening the door to the study of other psychiatric drugs. Finally, in 1959, Klein published some studies on the drug iproniazid, hope I'm saying that right, which was already in use for tuberculosis, and showed it had another use, as an antidepressant. This new type of antidepressant worked in a completely different way from the imipramine discovered in episode 20, and generally has less side effects. This discovery made him a scientific star, winning him the extremely prestigious Lasker Award twice. Klein is actually the only person who's ever done that. However, this award was tinged with controversy. After Klein was selected to be the sole recipient of the reward, he was sued by a colleague who claimed that Klein denied him recognition for his contributions to the research, and ultimately, Klein was forced to share the $10,000 award by a court. As more and more drugs were approved for use by the FDA, Klein would prescribe his patients cocktails of the newest psychiatric drugs, and focus very little on talking, often to maybe a fault. His patients would sometimes end up in clinics complaining of lots of side effects caused by their large doses and numbers of drugs prescribed, and Klein would prescribe 5 medications to patients regularly, where most psychiatrists would likely just give 1 or 2 to start. The author of one of the books I've been using, Jeffrey Lieberman, writes, quote, "I was able to guess whether a patient was one of Klein's simply by glancing at the list of medications on his chart." The new psychiatric drugs were an amazing advancement, but this was probably too much of a good thing. You might think that given Klein's recklessness and the negative effects it was having on patients, that he was eventually sued or something. But as far as I know, that never happened. Klein's career, however, was tanked a bit by something much less dramatic, his local IRB. IRB stands for Institutional Review Board, which is basically a group of people at research institutions who make sure that research is being conducted ethically, which apparently Klein decided he did not have time for. And while I have a little bit of sympathy and personally know it can be pretty frustrating to have your research held up while waiting for approval, it's an important process to make sure that patients aren't abused, which has happened far too many times in the past and will likely be a topic on this show at some point. Even worse, Klein didn't just not get approval from his review board, but also didn't get proper consent from some of his patients, who he was testing a new drug on. This is even more problematic because he was likely then experimenting on patients without their knowledge, which is pretty messed up. All this prompted an investigation of Klein by the FDA, who in 1982 decided he was no longer to be trusted with medical research, despite his fame and fortune. They made him sign a document promising to never conduct drug research ever again, which must have devastated him. I'm not sure if the timing is a coincidence, but just 1 year later, Klein would die of an aortic aneurysm. Klein's research was groundbreaking and likely helped many patients live happier, healthier lives. But he was also reckless, conducting research in unethical ways and ultimately being banned from conducting research at all. His rise was incredibly fast, just like that of the drugs he studied, and he argued against psychoanalysts, who were losing more and more ground in an ideological battle within the field of psychiatry. But despite all the advances in psychiatric drugs of the mid-20th century, there was still much that needed to be understood. If you'll remember from many of these episodes, the effects of psychiatric drugs were often discovered by accident, and usually the mechanism was a complete mystery. But in order to progress further, more needed to be understood about the brain, which is where we will begin next episode. Thanks for listening, and I hope you've enjoyed the show. If so, maybe tell a friend or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Thanks also to Jojo Tang, my editor, Angie Lee, our cover artist, and MuseOpen for this music.